Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lope on WNYC and WNYC.org.
In 2005, Josh Ruxin and his wife, Alyssa, left their cozy lives in New York City and bought one-way tickets to Rwanda. Their goal at first was to work in development and public health in a country that was still recovering from a brutal civil war and genocide. And then 3 years later, they decided to open a restaurant, and they called it Heaven. Josh Ruxin has written a memoir called A Thousand Hills to Heaven. It's published by Little Brown. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hadn't both of you spent some time in Africa before you'd even met?
Yeah, I first went to Africa, to Ethiopia and Kenya, when I was a teenager and fell in love with the whole continent, or at least East Africa. And my wife, when she was in public health school, spent some time working in Tanzania.
And so is that just a coincidence? Or, I mean, when you met, you probably talked about a shared experience.
Absolutely. For both of us, our hearts were always in Africa, and we felt that we could make the biggest contribution and have the greatest social impact there.
But didn't you go this time because of a chance meeting?
It was, certainly. I had the chance, thanks to a couple of donors, to move my work to focus on Rwanda for the Millennium Villages Project and also for Health Builders, which is my not-for-profit.
Well, you were at a party, weren't you? And somebody you got talking about what you did in school and...
Yeah, we were on a rooftop party in Manhattan, and a wonderful man by the name of Stephen Lewis approached both me and Alyssa and said that he had seen this fantastic development project in Kenya, and why don't we go and do it in Rwanda?
Especially since Rwanda was so much in need at the time.
Absolutely. In every single way, agriculture, health, education.
Well, I've always wondered how a country recovers from the kind of thing, the genocide, where almost a million people died and where your neighbor may very well have been implicated in the deaths of loved ones.
When we arrived in Rwanda in 2006, we certainly could see the scars quite visibly of genocide. And in fact, I remember the day that I looked at the door handles in our home and realized that they had all been kicked in. And in the course of the book, I mentioned that I learned from our neighbor that four people had been murdered at our house.
How long had you been married when you moved?
Only about a year.
And you had studied international development. What had your wife done?
I had studied public health and health history. My wife also actually had studied public health. That was one of the things that brought us together. We felt that working in public health was one of the ways to have the greatest impact.
Wasn't she in banking?
So Alyssa actually worked for Goldman Sachs downtown on their health program. So she was applying her public health skills to help the bankers of Goldman Sachs get into shape.
And when you left, did you think this was a temporary move? You kept your apartment in Manhattan, didn't you?
We did. We left for what we figured would be a Peace Corps-style stint of 2 years, and that was 8 years ago.
During your first year in Rwanda, there was a serious drought, and you organized international famine relief efforts throughout the country. Why was one of your projects to plant cassava plants to replace the ones that had died in the drought?
There was a horrible plant virus that was destroying cassava around the entire country. And cassava, of course, is the food staple. It's not terribly nutritious, but it fills up your belly. And
it's
we realized extremely so. Yeah, like a very, very tough potato. And we realized that if we could plant cassava that was both drought resistant as well as immune or at least resistant to this terrible plant virus, that people would be able to get back on their feet.
Hadn't you also tried to plant pomegranate trees? They're a lot more nutritious.
We did. We had a pomegranate farm that we set up, and it didn't end up working out as well as I had hoped.
Because people just didn't like pomegranates, or it was unfamiliar to them?
Well, that was one of the initial challenges, was convincing people to plant a tree with fruit that they'd never seen before. And then secondly, what happened was a U.S. agency actually got engaged and decided that they felt sorry for the farmers who were working this pomegranate plantation essentially for free and started paying them. And then everyone realized, oh, I can get paid for not doing anything. So those pomegranates.
Sounds like American farmers.
Yeah, exactly. Those pomegranate trees are actually still doing quite well. And my neighbor has planted all of the pomegranate trees on his farm up on Mount Kigali. So the genetics are still there. One day we will have a great pomegranate plantation.
You mentioned that cassava isn't all that nutrition. Doesn't it also contain a bit of natural cyanide?
Yeah, it does. You have to leach it out of the vegetable before you can actually serve it and make it good.
You describe Rwanda as quite beautiful physically, and you quote the local aphorism, "God sleeps in Rwanda." What does that saying mean to you nearly a decade into your residency there?
Something different than what a lot of Rwandans think of that aphorism for. God sleeps in Rwanda because it's a beautiful, lush, wonderful, relaxing, tranquil, spotless place where for me and Alyssa and our three kids, we found real happiness and tremendous security.
Well, your kids were born there, but God also sleeps could mean that God ignores Rwanda in some ways, and perhaps that was the reason that so many people were killed during the genocide.
Of course.
Has tourism rebounded at all since the Civil War ended?
Tourism is actually at an all-time high. And in fact, our restaurant, Heaven, entertains a number of tourists. Probably about a third to half of all of our clientele are tourists who come in to see the gorillas and also see Rwanda. And October was our busiest month on record after 5 years.
People come to see the gorillas in their natural habitat?
Exactly. So just 2 hours from Kigali, you can go into the forest with trackers and observe the gorillas in their habitat for 1 hour.
And are they easily spotted? Because I remember when Jane Goodall was doing her research, she had to hide in the bush for long periods of time.
Yeah, these gorillas have been habituated, and there are 50 tickets available every day. They cost $750 a ticket because it is a rather small natural resource. And there is no wilderness safari experience like it. It's absolutely extraordinary. Alyssa's done it a few times, and so have I.
Your background isn't in food. What got you think about opening a restaurant?
When we first arrived in Rwanda, Alyssa was working with Orphans of the Genocide and realized very quickly that they didn't have job opportunities. So she said to me, why don't I open a small cafe? Those were her words, a small cafe. I imagine some plastic chairs and not a great investment. But soon after, something called Bourbon Cafe opened, which actually exists right here in New York City as well. It's a Starbucks-style coffee shop. And Alyssa changed her mind and said, no, from the ground up, I am going to build the greatest gourmet restaurant in Rwanda to create as many jobs as I possibly can for poverty reduction.
And you named it Heaven, the English word heaven. Isn't Rwanda a Francophone country?
Rwanda certainly then was Francophone, but very recently changed the second language of the country to English. So all classes are conducted now in English, governments conducted in English, and French is being left behind.
What inspired the name Heaven?
The piece of property that
God
Alyssa...
sleeps there?
No, not at all. The property that Alyssa found has a tremendous view of Kigali and of the hills of Rwanda. And the way in which she built it was up on stilts. So it's this massive open-air terrace with sweeping views of the entire city. And so you can literally see the city churning below, and it's heavenly.
My guess is Josh Ruxin, Ruxin. His memoir is called A Thousand Hills to Heaven. What kind of food are you serving there?
It's pretty eclectic at this point. We've had a number of fantastic chefs from Brooklyn and from Spain come through the kitchen. And what we're committed to is delivering the best food with locally sourced inputs. So some of our favorites are we do a filet mignon with cassava chimichurri. You talked about cassava before. You don't just eat the root. You can actually eat the leaves. They're extremely nutritious. And we mix those up with some olive oil, some onion, garlic, pepper, and it is fantastic.
But this is nothing like the local cuisine.
Local Rwandan cuisine is not one of the great cuisines of the world. There are brochettes, which are extremely popular, which is basically meat that is grilled on a stick that can be delicious, served with fries. There's lots of beans, there's lots of rice, and there's lots of potatoes. But as a landlocked country, it wasn't on a spice route. So you don't have sort of the Indian influence that you would find in Kenya or in Zanzibar.
Now, you mentioned that one-third of your clientele are tourists, but that means two-thirds are locals. How was the restaurant received by the locals when you opened it?
We had a lot of different reactions. The Rwandans definitely loved it. I mean, one of our dear Rwandan friends who's featured in the book, Dr. Blaise, who's about 6'6" or 6'7", so he's quite a commanding man, walked into Heaven, and he said, "This is so incredible," and the restaurant was packed with 150 people. He said, "We don't need traditional aid anymore. We need 1,000 Heavens." And so he and others like him really recognized that this private investment was creating jobs that would reduce poverty and really put Rwanda on the map. So these days, we have about a third of our clientele who are Rwandans. They come in for business meetings. They come in for a drink at the bar. They come in for our goat brochette. And they come in to sample food that they wouldn't be able to get anywhere else in Rwanda.
And you're also providing jobs, you say. So do you see this as an extension of your earlier mission?
Definitely. When I first went to Rwanda, I thought that I knew a lot about development and a lot about poverty reduction. And the surprise for me is that with what Alyssa has achieved with the restaurant, I've seen that real permanent poverty reduction best comes from creating terrific jobs. And, you know, bear in mind that lots of our servers and lots of our staff in the kitchen had never even entered a restaurant before.
So there aren't a lot of restaurants in Kigali?
There are not that many restaurants. There is a real culture of eating at home and, for example, eating food in public is still something that's frowned upon. So you don't have fast food as you would have in a lot of other East African cities. So food is still something that's very sacred, perhaps in part because it's something that has not been abundant.
Now, has the government encouraged this?
Growing food or a
culture? Well, the whole process, after all, now you're helping farmers and you've opened a restaurant. I'm assuming other people have looked at your success and said, maybe I should do that as well.
What the government of Rwanda has really focused on is attracting private investment and getting people like me and Alyssa to invest, and not just capital, but invest management knowledge and systems and training in the country. And so that's the real opportunity. They haven't focused yet on the food of the country, but that might be coming soon after this book.
Are you just doing the restaurant, or are you still involved with the United Nations Millennium Village in Rwanda?
The Millennium Village in Rwanda is a tremendous success story, and real estate prices there have quintupled. There's no longer hunger. The famine that was there when I first arrived there in 2005 is ancient history. And actually, Mayanje, the Millennium Village site, is now a net food exporter. So they actually grow food that they ship across the border to Burundi. So that's actually not a lot of my work. My work is very much focused on health builders. We build new health centers where there are none. And we actually bring private sector management skills and some restaurant management skills to the health facilities.
What does a Rwandan say today if you ask whether he's a Hutu or a Tutsi?
Well, first of all, that's not a question that one would ask, because the response would be, I'm a Rwandan. I'm a Rwandan, and I'm here for my country.
So it's come that far from Tutsis being called cockroaches and the like, to everybody is equal?
Absolutely.
That's an incredible change over such a short period.
It's
because you think the country is traumatized by what happened?
Well, I think a lot of things are at play. The government of Rwanda has had community courts where the perpetrators of the genocide appeared in their communities for a couple of years. And so there has been an incredible amount of dialogue about the genocide, Another side of it is that nearly half the population was born after the genocide, and hundreds of thousands of people who lived outside of the country before the genocide have returned. And so there is this incredible, vibrant population that is looking outside and is certainly not looking backwards.
What about your kids? Do they speak English mostly, or do they speak one of the local languages?
So our kids speak some Kinyarwanda. They are pretty fluent in French. I insist on speaking in French to them, and their English is flawless.
And then what do you do on a holiday like Thanksgiving? I'd imagine there aren't too many turkeys around.
There aren't too many, but I actually tracked some down a few years ago and had the brilliant idea of putting them in the backyard. One of the turkeys went after my daughter, Maya, and that was the first turkey to slaughter. In the years since, we actually have worked with local farmers on fattening up the birds. We're going to have probably 120 people in heaven, including the American ambassador, and we'll be celebrating Thanksgiving American style in Kigali.
We've included some recipes from heaven on our show page at WNYC.org. The book is called A Thousand Hills to Heaven, published by Little Brown. It has lots of pictures as well, so you can see for yourself just how beautiful the landscape is in Rwanda. I don't know if Burundi is as pretty, because the two countries almost seem to be paired as former colonies.
I think Rwanda is a real gem. It is one of the most beautiful countries we've ever seen. And when people ask, what can we do to help Rwanda, we tell them, come on into heaven, come into the restaurant, spend money, tip well, and go see the gorillas and go see all the natural beauty available in Rwanda.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.